Chapter 10. The brothers in arms were an interesting group of men. I found out through conversation that they were all varied pastors, preachers, and men of the cloth. They were meeting for a summit at a nearby church when the world started to unravel. Two brothers, local to the area, Herbert and Juwan, suggested that they all head for a nearby gun store and range for safety and added protection. Some of the members of the summit stayed behind at the church, while others followed Herbert and Juwan to BTP. When they arrived, the varied men of the cloth formed the Brothers in Arms. The brothers that knew how to handle a firearm educated those who did not. The waves of demonic horrors that followed helped polish their gun-toting skills into the efficient fighting force that Katie, Anna, and I had stumbled upon. The Brothers in Arms had lost a few members to fighting the demons, and many more were bloodied, bandaged, and stitched. The fighting with the demons had been fierce, but these men possessed the strength to keep that fight going. They were damn good at what they did. For all the dead demons outside, there were only five brothers that had been lost. Herbert, one of the brothers that led the group to the gun store, had become the leader and was given the mantle of Big Brother. He was the first to greet us outside. He was tall enough that I had to look up to him. He had an authoritative presence and well-kept dreadlocks. Big Brother Herbert brought us inside and took us to the medical supplies. "We have things that can help the young lady." Herbert turned to look at Anna's hands. "But I'm afraid we lack all the needed materials to fully take care of this situation." I was still carrying Anna. She felt cool to the touch, even though it was hot outside and hotter inside the store. When we entered the store, many of the brothers went to resupply themselves for the ammunition spent on dispatching the giant squirrels. One of the brothers helped Katie find the proper size shell she needed for a shotgun. Herbert laid down a blanket for me to place Anna. Herbert and I both looked over her hands. "Do you have any stitches or sutures?" I asked. Herbert shook his head no. "Any superglue?" Herbert shook his head no again. "All used up already," he said regretfully. Herbert looked around and rubbed his chin. I also looked around, hoping for inspiration. The store was lit with glow sticks, flashlights, and electric lanterns. The amber light outside was beginning to turn orange. It was late afternoon, and soon the world outside would be swallowed up by the darkness of night. The brothers in arms had set up a barricade just outside the store and inside the entrance. Someone in the brothers had military experience, it seemed. The barricades were made of overturned tables and empty display cabinets from inside. There were two brothers posted at each barricade. It was easy to feel safe here. If only I could get Anna's hands to stop bleeding. "There is another way we could stop the blood," Herbert said after several long moments of consideration, "but it will be painful."
"I don't think there's a non-painful way out of this," Anna said.
"What are you suggesting?" I asked Herbert. Herbert took a step closer to me and said,
"We cauterize the wounds with gunpowder."
My immediate thought was, "That sounds badass and awesome. Let's absolutely do that." But then I remembered that this would be happening to a teenage girl who would probably find that experience less than awesome. But cauterizing the wound would stop the bleeding. Anna would be in pain, but still alive. So here are the words that I said. "Does someone here know how to do that?" Herbert nodded. "My brother." I looked around the room expecting one of the other brothers in arms to step forward. "Which one?" I asked. Herbert gave a mirthless chuckle. "My actual brother, Juwan." He scanned the nearby area and called out to the closest brother in arms. "Marcus, come here for a moment, please." The man I assumed to be Marcus hustled over to Herbert. The big brother whispered something to Marcus. "You got it, big brother." Marcus responded and went to the side of the store and out the door to the indoor firing range attached to the shop.
"What does cauterize mean?" Anna asked with a little worry in her voice.
"It means we are going to close the cuts with heat," I pointed at her hands. "It will hurt,
but it will be over soon. Herbert went behind the main sales counter and grabbed something. He returned with a partial bottle of vodka. "Do you have anything she could bite down on?" Herbert's face showed his concern. Everyone knew how much this was going to hurt, except for Anna. I pulled one of the washcloths I took from Walgreens out of my book bag. Herbert took it in hand and tried to put it in Anna's mouth. Anna violently pushed it away and scooted away from the priest. I just realized that Anna had good reason to just trust everyone in here except Katie and myself. Anna stopped moving when her back was against my legs and her hands were balled into fists pointed at Herbert. I reached out my hand to Herbert to take the washcloth back. Anna wouldn't let anyone else here get that close to her. I took the washcloth, moved it, and put myself in Anna's eyeline. I kneeled down and made a small roll out of the cloth. "Anna Bean, I need you to bite down on this." I held the washcloth up and clacked my teeth together. "Okay." Anna looked confused, but did as I asked. "Wah?" she asked with the washcloth still in her mouth. I looked at Herbert and extended my open hand, asking for the bottle of vodka. Herbert handed it over with a grim nod. I unwrapped the blood-soaked bandages from Anna's hands. The wounds were still weeping blood. I grabbed her hands gently, but with a firm grip. "Because this is going to hurt very badly." I doused the spirits on her wounds before I finished the sentence. She looked confused when the bottle started to move, but her expression changed as soon as the liquid hit the open cuts. Her eyes slammed shut, and she screamed through the washcloth in her mouth. I'm pretty sure she screamed obscenities in my direction. She tried to wrench her hands away from me, but I didn't let go. Her hands clenched into fists. "We had to clean the cuts out, or else they might get infected," I said in the most soothing voice I could muster. The anger in Anna's eyes told me that she wanted to kick me square in the balls, but she nodded her head in understanding. A man appeared at my side. He wore faded blue jeans and a white tank top spotted with blood. He smelled heavily of marijuana and carried a small white coffee filter in his right hand. Without a word, he deftly knelt down and poured a thin line of black powder over each cut on Anna's hands. He gently blew the excess powder away and swiftly used a lighter and lit the powder on each hand, then calmly walked away. His departure from our little scene was the only thing that was calm. The gunpowder did its job. It burned and sealed the wounds on Anna's hands, but in an extraordinarily painful way. She screamed and tried to close her fist around the flame to suffocate the burning. It didn't work. I held her as best I could, but she fought me as hard as Barnabas the demon. Herbert knelt down and helped me keep her thrashing to a minimum. Katie rushed over to see what was happening. "We're almost done," I told Katie before she could ask. "We had to cauterize her hands." Katie looked at the young thrashing girl with worried eyes. The worst part was, it wasn't over yet for Anna. When she stopped fighting, I let go and gently lifted her chin to look her in the eye. "Anna, you are an awesomely strong young woman. That was a terribly painful thing you just endured, but we're only 2/3 of the way there. We have to clean your hands again." I held the vodka close to Anna's mouth. "Take a swig. You've earned it." Anna surprised me when she shook her head and held her palms out for me to complete the treatment. I did so quickly, pouring the vodka over her palms again. She took it like a champ this time, yelling and cursing, but without the thrashing. Herbert brought over burn cream from a med kit and handed it to me. Anna flopped onto her back with her palms out at her sides and spat the washcloth out of her mouth. "I wish Elias hadn't pooped around all that ice cream," Anna said and laughed. "I really want ice cream, but I can't think about it without thinking of poop." Katie and I couldn't help but laugh. I rubbed the burn cream onto the purple and red scars in Anna's hands. Katie stroked Anna's hair, and Anna closed her eyes. Getting some sleep sounded like a really good idea.
But first, I wanted to thank the man that so quietly helped us and then walked away. Herbert, who was that? I nodded to the direction that the gentleman who smelled of marijuana disappeared.
That was Little Brother, Herbert said with a smile. He's my actual blood brother. He prefers to stay away from the fighting and excitement.
Herbert gestured a thumb over his shoulder to the pile of dead demonic animals outside.
Would it be all right if I talked to him? I asked, looking to see if Jawan was around.
Yeah, man, Jawan will talk to you. Herbert looked me square in the eye. Why are you taking that with you?
Herbert pointed at the katana I just picked up from the ground.
I take it everywhere.
I pointed at the many guns Brother Herbert was toting around his waist and his back to keep myself safe.
You be nice to my little brother, Herbert said with a heavy hand on my shoulder.
I found little brother Jawan with his back against the indoor firing range wall. The firing range was built in a large, semicircular metal bunker. The room was lit with skylights in the roof and a few stray bullet holes that punctured the metal sides of the room. Jawan was alone, surrounded only by a thick fog of smoke. The smoke seemed to come from a large brown blunt in his hand, and there sat a black leather-bound Bible next to him on the ground. He smiled as I approached and patted the empty spot of concrete next to him. I did sit next to him, but politely refused the burning blunt he tried to pass me.
Too much to worry about right now, I said.
Exactly.
He took a drag and held it for a moment. He exhaled and asked,
You consider yourself a man of God or a man of science?
I was not expecting that. I just wanted to come back here and thank you for your help with Anna's hands.
I extended my arm for a handshake.
Jawan graciously smiled and shook.
Not a problem, friend.
Has that thing seen much action? Jawan pointed at my katana.
Only in the past couple of days. Before that, it was only for practice and exercise.
Well, how many demons have you killed?
He asked. From the sword? Let's see. I had to think. How many have you killed altogether?
Jawan seemed intrigued.
One with the sword, one with the car, another with the sword. Katie killed a large bird with a shotgun, a few hellhounds with the sword, and another with a knife. Katie killed a few with her shotgun there, too. And then three more with another car.
Dude, that's amazing.
Huh? Jawan wasn't being sarcastic. The way he spoke was interesting. His voice had an odd cadence to it that was calming. I'm also pretty sure he was stoned out of his mind.
What these guys have done outside is pretty amazing.
That's mighty kind of you to say, man. Mighty kind.
What's your name?
Ernie.
Ernie. Cool. Cool. I'm Jawan.
Jawan held out his hand for what I thought was a handshake that turned into an odd handshake, chest bump, hug thing.
Good to meet you, sir.
Likewise, dude. Likewise.
Jawan took another puff and attempted to pass. I politely waved it off again.
So, Ernie? Are you a man of God or a man of science?
Maybe he was really stoned, or maybe he wasn't. He seemed either aloof or persistent. I couldn't tell which yet. I shrugged.
I don't really know what I consider myself. After some things that happened to my family, I don't really consider myself a man of God. I would call myself a man of proof.
Jawan raised an eyebrow at that.
You know the saying, the proof is in the pudding. So I guess I'm a man of pudding.
Pudding. Jawan chuckled.
The door connecting the gun store to the firing range opened, and Katie and Anna walked through. Katie had Anna wrapped in a blanket. They both made their way over to Jawan and I. Katie sat next to me, and Anna laid on the concrete floor next to us.
You left me again, Katie hissed.
I just wanted to come thank Jawan for helping Anna. I pointed to Jawan.
Katie looked at Jawan skeptically.
She stared at the rolled marijuana in Juwan's hand with distrust.
"Thank you for what you did," she said as politely as she could. It seemed to me that Katie didn't trust the man.
"What were you men talking about in here?"
"Ernie told me he's a man of pudding."
Juwan began to laugh so hard that he started coughing, and that rolled into more laughing and more coughing.
"What's going on?" Katie asked me.
I explained the short conversation that Juwan and I had. Juwan finished his coughing fit and chimed in.
"I was trying to get Ernie's opinion about what's going on out there."
"You mean the end of the world?" Katie asked incredulously. "The apocalypse? Isn't that spelled out in the Book of Revelation?" Juwan picked up the Bible at his side. It was well worn, with pages folded and spots marked and highlighted.
"What was described in here is not what's happening out there."
Juwan flipped towards the last section of the Bible.
"There are supposed to be the rapture. That whole scenario where men and women around the world are going about their daily lives. If people are working in the field, one will be taken and the other is left. Two people are working in the loom, one taken and the other left."
He tapped his fingers on his Bible emphatically.
"It's in there. Several times. But we didn't get it."
Juwan rose to his feet, leaving his Bible on the ground, but carried the blunt with him.
"The Book of Revelation talks about the four horsemen riding out war, pestilence, famine, death, all taking their course, all affecting the world at large. We didn't get those. It talks about trumpets and a holy army, the beast, the Antichrist. We didn't get any of those. Instead, we have chaos with giant animals, demons, and possessed people."
Juwan paced back and forth and suddenly stopped, turned, and looked at us.
"And I know why."
The blunt in his hand kept burning, and Juwan stared at us with apprehension in his eyes. Anna, Katie, and I weren't sure what to do.
"What do you mean?"
Anna broke the silence, pain and fatigue cutting through any patience she may have had.
"You know why?"
Juwan took another drag and held it for a few moments.
"It's because humanity let them in."
It's hard to take someone serious when their words are more smoke than sound.
"How could humanity let them in?" Katie asked with a heavy seasoning of skepticism,
and used her fingers to put air quotes around the word humanity. Juwan's eyes grew wide in his smile, as he smiled and tapped his head, but he remained silent.
"You know something?" I asked.
Juwan nodded and continued to tap his head.
"What do you know, Juwan?"
I almost rolled my eyes.
"That before all of this happened, right before, and leading up to June 6th, a very large number of priests were getting murdered."
Anna let out a small gasp. I took a step over to her and reminded her of what I said in the van.
"You were defending yourself. You were not evil. He was in the wrong. You were defending yourself."
Katie gave a sideways glance of concern towards the two of us.
Anna can tell you when she's ready," I said to Katie.
Juwan seemed to grow flustered with us since our side conversation came at the same time as his big conspiracy reveal.
"I said that priests were getting murdered."
Juwan seemed to hope that stressing the words would help us absorb his monumental revelation.
"But all you guys are still alive,"
Katie pointed out, speaking about the brothers in arms. "So that doesn't seem to matter."
"There was a certain type of priest being killed off."
"What type?" Anna asked Juwan quickly.
"The ones who carried the apostolic succession."
Juwan spread his hands and looked at us expectantly, like he had just dropped an atomic truth bomb. The clouds of marijuana smoke swirled in the dark orange beams of light coming through the metal walls of the firing range.
What's, apostate secession?
I didn't want to be the only person in the room who didn't know.
Apostolic succession, Jawan broke down each syllable for me, is where a priest can trace who ordained them, and the man who ordained that man, and the man before that, and the man before that, following links in a chain all the way back to one of the original 12 apostles.
Jawan liked to explain things with his hands. It would have been a little easier to take him more seriously without a roll of smoking Mary Jane in his hand.
2 weeks ago, there were thousands. Last week, hundreds. 4 days ago, maybe 20.
Jawan shook his head somberly.
Now? I have no way of knowing, but I'm pretty sure that number reached zero at the same moment that hell came to earth.
Anna's hands were clenched into fists and her arms were shaking. Before she could speak, I had some questions for Jawan and his theory. If thousands of priests were getting murdered in such a small span of time, we would have heard something about it. There was nothing on the news about anything like that.
Because someone didn't want people to know. Or maybe because someone didn't want the priest going into hiding, so many of the deaths were kept from public knowledge.
Then how did you know about them? I asked.
I was keeping track, Jawan responded.
Why? This whole idea was either completely crazy or crazily coincidental. Jawan pulled the neck of his shirt over to reveal a startling amount of scar tissue on the right side of his body.
I was told I needed a hobby.
What happened to you? Anna asked. Jawan took several long drags from his brown burning blunt.
I was a chaplain for the U.S. Army, Jawan explained, but all of the conviction and eagerness that possessed his voice before was gone. I was part of a convoy that was hit. Not many people survived. Those that did survive had to be patched back together.
Jawan sniffed audibly and pointed to the scar tissue.
But before help came, I watched people die. Men that cried out for their mothers or their wives. Women who wanted to go home to their families. I walked from person to person, corpse to corpse, closing their eyes, praying over them. I walked from dying man to dying boy, holding their hands and lying to them, saying that everything would be all right, that they were going to be okay.
Jawan sat down on the concrete floor. I understood why this man smoked so much. It was his coping mechanism for PTSD. I felt for the guy. I sat next to him and gave him a friendly but manly pat on the back.
Now what about the priest? I asked, hoping to get his mind off the horrors he was just reliving. While I was recovering, Jawan collected his thoughts, I was encouraged to find a hobby, something to fixate on. I went back to the Bible.
He patted the well-worn book next to him.
And I noticed something I had never paid attention to before.
He flipped the Bible open to a page marked with a yellow sticky note.
At the beginning of the New Testament, the lineage from Adam to Joseph is laid out. A roadmap of genealogy from Genesis to Jesus. From the beginning down to the man that married the Virgin Mary. There are 42 generations, father to son, before the man destined for the cross came to be. Then he ordained 12 apostles and set them out into the world. I thought that if I could track down how many generations of priests had passed down the chain, then I could predict when the apocalypse would happen. Maybe there would be a master plan, a grand symmetry in the numbers of the world. If there were 42 generations from Adam, then maybe there would be 42 generations of priests from Jesus until the book of Revelation came to pass. Is that what happened? Anna asked, sitting next to Juwan and I. Katie remained on her feet. Juwan shook his head. There have been hundreds of links in that chain. New priests ordained every year, but I kept tabs on everyone I could find. Then, recently, I noticed they started dying in mysterious ways. Juwan paused to take a drag from his PTSD relief, and Katie cut in. Mysterious ways? How could you know they were dead if they weren't reported by the news? Even if the deaths and murders weren't being reported, families and friends still posted obituaries and pictures about memorials. Another pause for another drag. As he spoke, he quickly walked over to the wall where I first found him and pulled a manila folder out of a messenger bag. I tracked them. I have proof. Juwan's voice sounded irritated, like he had to defend himself before about all this. It crossed my mind that maybe this was why the other brothers-in-arms left him alone out here. He flipped open the folder, thumbed through the loose sheets of paper that had handwritten notes on every leaf. Three priests found dead in China that choked on their food in a hotel room. He showed us the black and white newspaper clipping he saved. Another five in Japan were found dead because of CO2 poisoning from a generator being used inside the home. But there wasn't even a power outage, and the generator wasn't supplying power to anything. It was just running inside the house. Four separate incidents where priests were crushed in freak accidents. Huh. 16 more. 16 mugged and murdered on the same night. Juwan shook his head fervently. The deaths of all those people came so fast and so close to each other, and right on top of all this happening. That can't be a coincidence. It can't be. Juwan shook his head. I wasn't sure how the deaths of these men and women and the world ending were connected, but Juwan did present a compelling argument. I stood next to him and looked at the data in the folder. Each piece of paper had an estimated time of death with dates and a chain of names that linked the succession that he had talked about before. There definitely seemed to be enough proof here. Little brother, a voice called calmly from the entrance to the firing range. It's time for the nightly blessing. So it is. Juwan rose to his feet and collected his Bible. You should join us. Bring your weapons. Why? Katie said, skepticism still running rampant in her voice. That's what we bless, he said simply, as he flicked away the blunt and left the room.